lights out, away we go. A decent start off the line initially from Quartararo. Jack Miller though has got his Ducati power going, the Bologna bullet. Marquez also has got the inside line, but Miller has the lead.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle racing. This episode number 660. I'm one of your hosts, Skyler Vicaroy, and joining me as ever, which you would come to expect on the show, is none other than Jim McDowell. Jim, how's it going?
Yeah, that's how it's going.
No. Well, you know what? I got a rebuttal, Jim. Right back at you.
Just to really torque everybody, it's actually a Dr. Pepper Zero. Well, but no, I couldn't resist at least having that sound in there.
Well, this one I've got a Tropical Galaxy Hazy Beer here. This is from Almanac Beer Co. Now, this is a little bit different hazy because this is a sour hazy.
Sour hazy. All right.
Yeah, so this got some flavoring of mango, pineapple, coconut, lime. Basically, they took a tropical rainforest and threw it up in here. So,
nice.
Yeah, I've had this one before. It ranges in my, I think, mediums of beers where if you like sour beers, this is probably going to go further up your list. I'm not the hugest guy on sour beers, but I do enjoy this one for a nice, like, hot day because it's quite crisp.
It'll work. It's starting to become warm here. We're supposed to be into the 80s here by the weekend, so I'll consider that success.
Yeah, that's not bad. I think we're going to be doing that as well. So that's cooling off for us. last couple weekends, it's been hot. I mean, the pool's been a busy place. Even though I don't think it's technically supposed to be, but then no one's really enforcing that. And yeah, I'm cool off of our. I don't really go to our pool as it is because, you know, big old community pool.
Yeah.
And I see nothing but kids in there, so you know it's the community bathroom.
Yeah.
So
that's why we have our own pool. When it gets warm here, we can just do our own thing in our own pool. And it's my and it's my toilet. You know.
That's right. My parents got a big old pool up their house, so if I ever want to go for a swim, I just go up there and, you know, we have a good old time. I don't necessarily need to be using the one here. But anyway, we do have a wonderful show for you all in the store here today. We got some listener feedback. Once again, another name you will recognize from many shows here. Scott Baldwin writes in. And Scott, he says, MotoGP seasons will always end at Valencia because Dorna is a Spanish company and all the corporate wives love a party city like Valencia. It's a great place for everyone else to cap their season at, too. And then he's talking about Paulo Costa. He said he cannot go to MotoGP next year because of the 18-year-old age requirement. If you remember from our last show, me and Jim were I had proposed to Jim, I wonder if he could make the jump. But with the age requirement, that's not a possibility. To continue on with the email, Scott says, which is good because he needs to seriously muscle up before getting onto one of those 300-horsepower beasts, which was a point that Jim brought up during our discussion as well. Now, Dorna has massaged the rules carefully, and again, this is back to Scott's email, but Dorna has massaged the rules carefully, which brought a host of factors into the sport. It's great having no idea who will win on Sunday. As Jim Race always said, this is going to be the best season ever. I think that was a Martin thing, actually.
I thought it was Martin, too, but I wasn't going to say anything, because then I thought, well, Jim did say it, too, but I don't know who said it first. We'll have to ask Martin if he said it first. Martin claimed he did.
I do believe it's Martin. If anything, it's been associated with him for so long. Maybe he takes over, but I will say it's from the good old days of when Martin and Jim were hosting the show, and this show was quite the beast back then. But yeah. Any comments there for Scott?
Yeah, I think the part here with the ending the season in Valencia kind of goes with what I've said, that hey, there isn't going to be a race in America this year. Sadly, like I said, everybody's going to be globetrotting around. It also, we'll kind of talk about it in the news, but it looks like some parts of the Far East may not have a race. Some will. They're going to fly back into Valencia. It's going to be late November, and nobody's going to want to get back on a plane to get them to the United States to have a race there. And I don't think anybody wants to party in America. I think everybody'd rather party in Spain because that's where almost everybody is. So that's how I see it. I think Scott kind of sees it the same way as I do. The Acosta thing. Yep, definitely he's not going to MotoGP. Definitely the age requirement. Yes, he needs to bulk up and whatnot. Now, I will say this. If the kid runs off with the Moto3 title this year, I do not see a reason for that kid to stay in Moto3 one more year. Don't see it. Put him on a Moto2 bike, right? Get him on a bigger bike. let him physically develop on that bike. His 17-year-old self would be whatever he accomplishes is good. And then his 18-year-old self can win that title and then go on as a 19-year-old to be in MotoGP and still beat everybody's records for being the youngest winner on a MotoGP bike. So I see that one rolling out. But again, he really does need to bulk up. I mean, a MotoGP bike is an animal, and especially now with the standardized electronics, they're not the easiest things to ride, which is what we want out of this, right? I think we all want to see this. That's the allure, right? I mean, that's one of the things, like, I hate to go back to the days of 500s and be like, oh, it was so fantastic and magical. Well, one of the magical things about it was the fact that people were riding something that essentially was almost untamable, right? Like, you had to really figure out how to tame that beast, because it was a light switch of about 1,200 RPMs between 8,000 and 9,000, and that's where it all was. So, you know, I mean, that was the part that was interesting. And, you know, now it's like we went to that full-on traction control, absolutely massively wicked electronics that knew everything about the bike that and where it was on the track so it could tune itself for it. And like, eh, we went away from that. We got to a standardized system that has some basics on it. Now, Moto 2 has some basic traction control settings on it as well. That'll give Acosta some time to figure that part of his race strategy out. So, you know, let him have a Moto 3 year, a couple years of Moto 2, move to Moto GP. And I will echo the kudos that Scott is talking about with Dorna. They have done spectacular with this rules package to bring in rules that all the factories agree on and all the factories are doing wonderful with. And you are seeing the fruits of this come to bear with the fact that you cannot figure out who's going to win on Sunday. You literally have no idea. And that's the best part about racing, is you have a chance of all these different guys winning on all these different bikes. And that's the cool thing. And that's, we talk about it all the time in Formula One. And yeah, it's not a Formula One podcast, but you know who's going to win on Sunday in a Formula One race. It's going to be a Mercedes. Just that's who it's going to be, because it's the superior car with the superior guys driving it. Well, you don't have that now. Now, when Marquez becomes, and if Marquez recovers fully and becomes his old self again on a motorcycle, you may see, he's going to win some races or something, or it might become, quote, oh, boring, because he's winning a bunch of them. But they're still going to be Quartararo fighting for it and whatnot. So
yeah, even when Marquez was on his crazy streaks, if anybody got up there and hung with him, he started to sit back and ride behind them, right? He started to pull that technique, and then he would, you know, try to pull the pin with three laps to go. And that made for some good racing, right? It wasn't just go out there. I think probably the person who was the most boring racer was probably Jorge Lorenzo, because if he got out to the front, I mean, he just killed you with lap times. There was no coming back to that, because he just was ice cold and didn't make mistakes. And he lost 6/10 throughout the entire race. It was insane. Like, every lap was the same. You could just see where his tires were falling off at the end, right? Because he had the whole thing where, like, the tires were great at the beginning, but tank was full. But as the tank emptied out, the tires got worse. So he was able to balance that through an entire race, lap after lap, 20-something laps, and he would only lose 6/10. That's why you're a world champion right there.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with all that, so I really can't say anything else.
You know what else is important about bulking up too? Is preventing some injuries, right? When you're a bit slight, call back to Danny Pedrosa. Every time you come off that bike, it was like a major injury. You get a little bit of muscle and you can bounce off the ground a little bit better. So definitely putting on, you know, not just the weight, but, you know, usable weight as well, you know, getting it in the right places. He's definitely gonna have to spend some time not only on the road bike, but, you know, in the gym and actually picking up some heavy stuff.
Yep, definitely. And, you know, we said this I think maybe it was Derek and I had this conversation about the Onchu twins, right? The one of them looks like he's 18, the other one looks like he's 12, right? Puberty hits different people at different times. You know, right. So you don't know, you know, he could go over this summer and bulk up and have a growth spurt and, you know, really be able to handle a Moto 2 bike without problems. You just don't know what's going to happen. I think because Jack was 20 when he left Moto 3 and went right to Moto GP.
I think that's what it was.
I think we figured that out. Anyway, Anyway.
I mean, it was only a week ago, so, you know, I mean, that's a lot to ask of my memory these days. I mean, I barely know what day it is today, as a matter of fact. So.
Yeah, time's a flat circle with this pandemic. I'm on the hamster wheel, you know. I get up, I go to work, go to gym, get up, go to work, go to the gym, come home, get up, go to work, go to gym. It's like, that's all it does.
Yeah, I've been on the paternity leave, so mine's get up at random times, scream at me, scream at me, scream at me, go for a walk at some point, feed, scream, lots of diapers in between. And then my wife goes, okay, it's time to go to sleep. Oh, okay, cool. I didn't know the sun was down yet, but yeah. Anyway, let's get on to the news. Oh, before we do, remember, folks, oh, and thank you, Scott, for writing in. If you want to be like Scott and write in here to the show, all you need to do is go to your favorite email client and reach us at motopod@motopodcast.com. That will go to all of the hosts. Most likely we'll respond to you quickly there in the email, but if it's something that we're going to bring up a topic on the show, we'll go ahead and add it and discuss it here amongst ourselves. All right, into the news. Jim, why don't you run us through it?
So as we kind of hint foreshadowed earlier, courtesy of GP1, the Australian round, that is the island, is under threat of cancellation as the Australian borders are closed until 2022, putting the GP in doubt. And even if they do decide to let the teams in, there's going to be a mandatory 7-day quarantine for everybody before they even let you out. Now, I'm not sure how Formula One is going to handle this, because they're still, in theory, going to have a race down there in November. And with MotoGP being just before October, I'm not sure what's going to happen, but it's something to keep an eye on. My guess is that we don't have the race in Australia. We may have a race in Malaysia, and we may have a race in Thailand. I don't think we'll have one in Japan, mainly because Japan's got huge issues coming because they're going to host the Olympics in July. And I think they're going to want to try to keep that down to, you know, the bare minimum number of people required to actually do the Olympics. I think they're going to put a ban on people, you know, essentially just traveling to the Olympics if they can. And they're going to have their own issues from that they're going to have to deal with. And I don't think they want to throw in a MotoGP thing on top of that as well. So there's that. The race at the Kimi Ring in Finland has been canceled. I don't think any of us are really going to be surprised about that one. They kind of cited the COVID and construction being behind, etc. And I'm wondering if that's sort of code for, well, we don't have any more money to actually build the track, but no one's saying that yet. I mean, we've seen this happen before with numerous different racetracks. I give you the track that was supposed to happen in Wales, also the track that was supposed to happen in Northern Ireland. None of those actually happened because the money ran out and we didn't get any tracks there. So I wasn't surprised by this one, but we do get two races in Austria. I mean, why Austria? I mean, I like the track, but it's like, yeah, it's a point and squirt. There's nothing that really happens at that track. I mean, it's fascinating. I mean, admittedly, there has been some good racing there. The last couple of turns are fantastic, right? Because the unexpected happens there. But other than, and we had that craziness with the crash there with Zarco and Morbidelli's bikes and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, that track is not like one of Jim's favorite racetracks to see a race at, right? I'd rather have two races at Mugello. I'd rather have two races at Aragon. I'd rather have every race at Portimão if I could get it, right? So, I mean, that's kind of how it is. But anyway, the Kimi Ring, maybe it'll be on there next year. And next in the news, Alesia Spargo has undergone arm pump surgery. I need arm pump mouth. This seems to be the thing to do nowadays, is go get your arms operated on so that you don't have arm pump. And Miller did it. Quartararo's done it. Alesia's now done it. Usually this comes in spurts, you know what I'm saying? And it's fashionable for a while. Everybody's got it. And then, yeah, you are. So that's that part of the news. You still with me, big guy?
Yep. So the reason why Jim's checking in is because we've been having some, I don't know, not we, I have been having some technical issues. Couldn't get the show started, and then partway through the news, my computer decided to freeze up. So, yeah, that's always a fun stuff. But Yeah, I think that's about all the news except for... Oh, no, there is a bit one more. We have one more there, don't we?
Yep. So Paolo Ciabatti admits that the option of 8 Ducatis on the MotoGP grid is on the table. Small factory, let's build 8 bikes. I can't think that all 8 are going to be true factory, right?
Mm-mm.
I think 4 would be.
Mm, yeah, best bet.
I think you'd have Pramac would have 2 factory bikes. I think, obviously, the factory would have 2 factory bikes, right? There's 4. I think 2 other teams would get 2020s, or maybe one team gets 2020s and one team gets 2019s. Right? Something like that.
Yeah. Now, here's what's interesting, right? That's definitely, I think, what you're on to is the most sensible thing. But let's talk about something real quick, Jim.
Okay.
Let's say Mr. Valentino Rossi gets his team together and Ducati's like, we'll supply the bikes. Is Ducati really going to look at the Italian team and be like, we want to give them last year's bike? Or are they going to want to try to push to put them on the new bikes as well? I don't know. I would still think they would do 2019s over there. I think Rossi might be aware of where he's at in his career, because I think he'd do like a year on his own team and then have his brother there next to him so they could sell that for a year, and then he brings on whoever he needs to at that point. But the fact that Ducati is doing 8 bikes, honestly, it puts everybody else to shame. Really. I mean,
yeah.
Outside of Aprilia. Aprilia, no. They're a small team as well. But, you know, Honda, Yamaha, I mean, Suzuki, really. I mean, y'all need to be... I think Suzuki needs to step up, honestly. I think they have the bike that they could just give somebody their last year's bike and make the resources work or something. It's such a good bike, too. It doesn't look like it's completely terrible to ride. But if Ducati's going to put 8 out there, I mean, more power to them.
Yeah, I mean, the Honda thing. Should they put more bikes out there? Potentially, right? I mean, they could easily put another 2 on the grid and have 6. I think they could anyway, right?
Yeah.
It could, and you could even say, well, okay, 4 factory bikes, and then 2 bikes are last year, sort of like what Yamaha always did with Tech 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can sit there and say, well, okay, KTM's got 4 on the grid. Why can't they bring another 2 and have 6? So 6 at Honda, 6 at KTM. So there's 12, right? If Ducati puts another 6 on there, you've got 18 bikes already. Yamaha's going to throw, you know, 2 in there. So there's 20.
Yamaha has 4, though. Patronus.
Right, sorry, Patronus, yeah. So 4 there, so you've got 22, and then you have Aprilia with 2, but that's going to probably be, you know, that's 2 there. So there's 24. I mean, you can't really get...
Wait,
there's only
Suzuki.
So much space on the grid, right?
Yeah. Well, that's right, because... All right, so... Yeah, because it basically is one of the teams now, but it'd be a swap, right? Adding on.
Yeah.
So, like I said, we've got the 4 Hondas, right? So we've got the factory team, and then we've got LCR, right? And then we've got the 4 Yamahas, right? That's Petronas and the factory.
Correct.
Then we've got 2 Suzukis, 2 Apes, right? We've got that all covered up there. We got 4 KTMs, so we got the factory and...
Tech 3.
And then we've got...
Those are all equal bikes.
Yep. Then we've got Ducati with 4 factory bikes, because that's 2 factory, or 2 in the factory team, 2 in Pramac. And then right now they have...
Marini's got 1.
Right. Oh, is Marini's factory?
No, but he has a Ducati.
Okay, yeah. So him and Bastianini, right? So that's 2 mm-hmm. there. And what's that, the Esperanto, whatever they changed it to?
Yeah,
it's no longer
where, yeah, Esperanto VR46 something.
Right. So, yeah, I mean... And then, of course, it's supposed to be split next year, right? Esperanza is going to be gone, and their spot is going to be filled with the 2 Aprilia's factory team. And then you've got the VR46 team, which is going to be 2 bikes, right? So we're net additional 2 bikes next year.
Right.
So,
yep.
Man, that's a big ask for any team. But the fact that Ducati's... If they can do that, I mean, I think they should just... There should be just, like, an extra bonus for that. Like, you should have, like, your funds. You get a bigger slice of the pie from the MotoGP, you know, the Dorna pie, for supplying that many bikes. Maybe that is the way it is. I don't know. But it seems like that they're putting in so much effort to keep the sport alive so we don't have to go back to the CRT days that they should be rewarded for that as well.
Can't argue with that, but we're never going back to the CRT.
God,
that's
no.
just
Please,
not
no.
happening.
Please no.
No. It won't. I mean, look, I hated the CRT days as much as anyone.
Did you hate it more than Jules? I don't know. I'm pretty sure nobody hated it more than Jules. Yeah.
You got me on that one. But, okay, I was no fan of it. Mm. But if you didn't, the part that drove me crazy was you had to put a CRT bike into the park for me. Stop. It's off the rack. But the thing that is with me is that you wouldn't have the great racing you have now if Dorna hadn't done a CRT, because they proved to the factories, hey, look, you don't run the series. We do, and we're going to call the shots. Now, you can either comply and come along for the ride and enjoy everything with us, or we're going to be over here with this. And it was the factories easily went, whoa, these guys are damn well dead serious about what we're doing. And then they started talking about how they were going to phase themselves out of the electronics and everything else that they were doing. So
true.
So as much as everyone probably hates it, they were a necessary evil for Dorna to wrestle control from the factories so that they could define the rules of what was going on. And we have profited greatly by that because we have such great racing now.
Yep. Very true. Very true. All right. Well, I think that's kind of it for the news for us. We can get into some race chit chat. Don't you think so?
I thought you had something to say after the news.
Oh, man. How quickly things slip memory. Well, I got distracted with this whole computer technical thing.
That's true.
Yes. But in a segue, you too can have computer issues. No, we don't want to lead it like that. But so, folks, we are looking for at least one more, if not a couple of hosts to join the Motopod team. After some deliberation between Jim, myself, and the other hosts, just because of my current situation with the expanding family, and most likely we're going to be expanding again in the near future, the show is just not going to be something I can do going forward after this season, and then probably won't be making my return at any point again. Not a hiatus this time, but a definite full leave. I've done some, I think it's like 5 or 6 years on the show now. I've had a great time doing it, but it is my time to finally step away. So we would like to continue the show if we can. We would need someone who can commit to the show, much like Jim has or Derek in the past or any of the other hosts that have been on the show. It is a bit of work. You do get to watch, all the races. You do get some perks, when it comes to going to the races and speaking to people and getting contacts and, watching races and so on and so forth. But you do need to put in the work. When you first come in, you won't need to worry probably so much about learning how to edit right away. Jim can help a lot with that. But you will need to eventually start to pick all that stuff up. But we are all able to assist with that. And all of the hosts are still in the background on the show. And I mean, we've got a lot of big hitters here that do help out, keep everything running here in the background and can definitely assist with it. But having said all that, if you are interested in becoming a host here on the podcast for the near future or for a little bit longer than that, just go ahead and write us in. Write into motopod@motopodcast.com. We can go ahead and start the conversation. And then if this is something that you want to do, you feel comfortable with doing, I will get you onto the shows this year so you can start learning how it goes. It takes a little bit to kind of build up your flow. It takes a little bit to get your nerves down so you get rid of the ums and the likes and the you knows. And everything slows down to where you're thinking about the race and not every word that you want to say at all the time. So the sooner the better, obviously. But we definitely want to get people on the show. We want to continue it going on, but we also understand that everybody else is very busy in the world today and they have things to do, and a podcast may not be, but, if it's something that you're interested in, just give us a shout.
And with that, let's get to the racing.
Now, before we get into the races that we talk about, I want to talk about one we don't talk about. I want to talk about Moto E.
Okay.
We briefly discussed it at the end of the last show, at the very tail end. And if you didn't listen to the whole show, you probably missed it. We didn't talk about it in depth, but I did watch it this week. It was the best race of the weekend, by far. The passes, the drama, they actually got to race. They didn't go out there and try not to fall over on the wet track. They actually got to race and make passes and go back and forth. It was crazy down to the last corner of the last lap. I know it's a short race, but it was a lot of fun. And if the future of Moto E looks like that, I'm starting to get pulled towards it's going to survive when it gets there. So if there is one to check out to see how Moto E is going, watch the race from this weekend.
I'll have to go check it out because I haven't done that yet. So I can do that.
Yeah, they had a dry track.
They're the only ones who had a dry track.
Exactly. But it was good. All right, Jim, let's go ahead and talk about some MotoGP.
Okay. So Le Mans is not what I consider to be one of the greatest tracks that we go to. There are better tracks, but there is always something crazy and wild that happens at Le Mans just because the weather is so unpredictable. Therefore, not only has weather affected race day, it affected qualifying, practice, the whole nine yards. The whole weekend was weather affected, which leads to some crazy and wild things happening. Such be that in the first round of MotoGP qualifying, you had Aleix, Bagnaia, Mir, Rins, and Binder are all in Q1. That is like pretty much like everybody there is a former winner except for Aleix, and the Aprilia has been so good this year that this is the first time he's been in Q1.
I think remember how we talked about, and I haven't been keeping track of it, but I'm almost sure at this point in the season we are down.
We said everybody would be in there.
Yeah, I think about only four people have not been in Q1 at this point.
That's right. Yeah, it's that crazy. It's just how it's good. So they all are going out on a track that's starting to dry. What's interesting is Rins and Mir aren't anywhere near the top two. And you got to be in the top two to get into the next qualifying. They're not even close. I mean, not even close at all. And all of a sudden, like, you know, crazy things happen. So out of the blue, Salvadori throws down an incredible lap, and he pips his teammate for the pole for first place. And it's an Aprilia 1-2. And Aleix had come through, and he saw that he had made it. He starts to celebrate a little bit too soon because there's people who still had laps to go. And he wound up being tossed out by Marini, who came through with a great lap to pip Aleix. So it wasn't an Aprilia 1-2, but it was Salvadori and Marini going through into the second qualifying session. Now, the second qualifying session, the track was iffy. The wind was always picked up, and Le Mans dries quickly. The question was were people going to go out on slicks? Was anybody going to try it? Now, me, I figured for sure Marquez would have thrown slicks on the bike and gone after it. I was wrong about that one. The gamblers was Petronas. Both Morbidelli and Rossi go out on slicks to start with. But it was obvious that was the thing to do because after one or two laps, Miller came back in to get slicks, and Quartararo came in for slicks. Marquez also came in for slicks. So now everything's all jabbled up. Rossi was in the gravel. Rossi is having the most miserable season ever. That might be like the new thing. You know how best season ever? This should be like most miserable season ever for Rossi. We could do that. And right, it's been terrible. You got to admit, it has been quite bad. So when we get down to about 4.5 minutes left to play, it's Paul Espargaro, Miller, Marini, and Nakagami. Marquez comes flying around with red helmets to take a provisional pole position ahead of Nakagami, Paul Espargaro. So it's all three Hondas on the front row, and there's like 30 seconds left. And everybody's like, well, that's it. Marquez's superiority in these changeable conditions. He's been able to go fast. You spoke too soon. There were still people flying around the track, most of which was Morbidelli, Miller, Zarco, and Quartararo. And Vinales all suddenly started turning in red helmets. It's like, well, this could go all upside down and twisted, and it did. And it took a little bit to shake it all out, but Quartararo wound up on pole. Vinales was second. Miller was then third, so he's on the front row, important. Morbidelli, then Zarco. Then it becomes Marquez, Nakagami, Espargaro, Rossi, Oliveira, Salvadori, and Marini. It was a fantastic qualifying session. If you have a chance to go watch it again, it is amazing because everybody had pretty much put the Hondas on the front row and said that that was it.
Well, because it was weird because after the Hondas had gone through, there was like that dead time because the track has started to get wet again, right? Like there's a little bit of sprinkle, so everyone thought, okay, that's it. They got it in at the right time. But then the guys came around again, like you said, with like 30 seconds left, and they were like, all right, let's just send it. We went out. We did that extra lap in the sprinkles. We noticed the track was still dry. Let's go. And it was insane. Like, Marquez went from provisional pole to like 6th or 7th. It's like, oh, well, that happened rather fastly. And then even Quattro, when he was coming around, he's like, yeah, I was either going to get pole or crash. I just sent it as fast as I could.
Yeah. So all of that, I think, was kind of really some pretty unique foreshadowing for the actual race that happened on Sunday morning. Now, this point in the time, the track had dried up fairly well. We've already had the Moto 3 race. We've had the Moto 2 race. The track is basically dry, but we have black clouds that are rolling in, and everyone is trying to figure out what's going to happen. Everybody started on soft tires because it was cold. It was, again, there's a racing line that's dry. But the whole track is not dry, and there's still some wet spots in there. When we take off, Miller gets a hole shot. We would expect that from the Ducati, followed by Vinales and Quartararo, Nakagami, Marquez, and Pol Espargaro. Now, all this starts to be good, and everyone starts to be running around. And what we're waiting for is whether or not there's actually going to be that rain. And Pol has a moment, and then between him and Morbidelli, and they're into the gravel. And Morbidelli appears to be in a little bit of pain. Now, he had supposedly tweaked his leg out the ranch with Rossi and the boys a week before, and so he fell awkwardly in the gravel, so he was hurting pretty good. Vinales was taking it on to Miller. Nakagami had gotten on past Marquez, and Rins had gone from way back in the pack. He was suddenly up to the front. And
he went from 15th to 5th in two laps.
Yes. Incredible that he took that distance and went by that far. But now rain is starting to fall. So it's like, okay, is it going to just sprinkle and we stay on slicks? Is it going to rain harder? What exactly are we going to do? Vinales somehow magically went from – or sorry, I take that back. Quartararo went somehow magically. He went from – being third to leading the race in one turn just because people were starting to second guess where their breaking point was because they're starting to see the rain on the visor. And Quartararo just basically threw caution to the wind and wound up being in front. But as soon as he got to the front,
just to jump,
what'd you say, Skylar?
This part here, this is a very interesting look into Vinales' psyche on a bike. I think because he was up there with Miller and he was up there with Quartararo, right? Vinales was flying. But the moment three specks of water hit, it was a little bit more than that, but a few drops hit, and he did the fade real quick, right? And the other guys are just going. This is, I think, part of the problem of Maverick Vinales that you always bring up. If it's not perfect, it ain't going to work.
Right. The Vinales' problem is between his ears.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about that. Mm-hmm. You know, I can tell you time and time again, one of the most fun times I had was when it was raining when I was racing club. Like, okay, yeah, I wasn't as good as the guys who were the fastest guys that were in our club group, if you will, right? But when it was raining, I always rolled up that start line and the false grid. I had a smile on my face. Guys, it's raining. It's going to be slick and it's nasty out there. And they think I'm like a lunatic. But I came from dirt track, so if the bike starts moving, I don't really care. It isn't going to matter to me. You know, some people don't ever do dirt track. They just simply buy a street bike, and they get going on it. They take a track day or something, and they start racing. And they're giftedly fast, but they're giftedly fast when it's dry. They're not fast when it's wet. It's a psychological concept that you have to get over that somehow what you're on is that you can go as fast as you think you can go, on water. It's one of those things where you got to simply basically maybe take out your brain or set it aside, or at least have an understanding that the tires and things that you have are so good you can drag your knees when it's raining. It's just how it is. But that, in a nutshell, yes, Vinales' problem is truly around his head. And until he can straighten himself out, he's not going to go anywhere. He's going to be up and down like a yo-yo all season. Some days it's going to be perfect. He's going to have a setup. The tires are going to work. He's going to be fast. And if he misses it by a little bit, or the track changes, or something goes wrong, he can't recover from it. That's how it is. You know how you said that this is an interesting part of the race? This is where things get super interesting in this race, because the rain is coming down now. So everyone heads to the pits to change bikes. And then this is where controversy and chaos ensue. Quartararo led everybody into the pits. Quartararo comes into the pits, but he stops in the wrong pit box. He stops at his teammate's pit box, and he has to run around the bike and get on to his bike. Now, Marquez was coming in behind Quartararo, and Marquez cheated and went over the white line. There's a picture on Twitter. It's in David Emmett's feed from Moto Matters, where you clearly see that Marquez has cut across that line. Was that the question? Then became, should Marquez have been disqualified? Should he have had a long lap penalty? He got none of that. But I think in the chaos of what was going on, I'm willing to bet that race control missed that one. I'm not too sure, but yeah, he probably should have at the very least, gotten at least a long lap penalty. Miller also comes in at that time too. Now everybody swaps bikes, and lo and behold, Marquez comes out leading. Well, okay, well, at the time, we're wondering what really happened to everybody else. Well, Miller had a really slow stop. He had to, like, walk five steps to get onto his bike, so that's part of it. And the other part was that, you know, Quartararo had stopped into the wrong pit stall. So we come back out with Marquez leading, Quartararo, Miller right behind. Then we find out that Miller is going to get a double long lap penalty because he was speeding in the pits. And I'm going, how do you speed into the pits, right? Because you've got the button and you take away on the button, and that's, you're doing that part. Well, he didn't get slowed down to 60 Ks before he hit the entrance to the pits. He was going too fast. He was doing about 76 Ks. So that's a double long lap penalty. Okay, so we got to get all this to shake out. Meanwhile, Marquez is out front doing what Mark Marquez does in changeable, crazy conditions. He's going fast. He's pulling away from Quartararo, and he's got what arguably is the correct tire to be on. He's got the medium compound reins so that if the track dries, those are probably going to go the distance. Miller had a soft rear, a medium front, and Quartararo had softs on both sides. Well, if it's pouring rain, the softs are going to be good, but I don't think anybody thought that that was going to last. So again, Marquez probably is on the right compound of tire. However, what happens to Marquez is he decides to put too much throttle on at the last turn and flips himself off the bike and into the gravel trap. Congratulations, Mark Marquez, for screwing that one up. Now, I will give Mark a small pass on this one, and I'm not trying to justify this, but he has been off of a motorcycle for over a year. He himself has admitted that I made a mistake, and that's my fault, but I'm going to cut him a little bit of slack because your reflex, you're not used to riding at that speed, at that concentration level at that point, and he's probably half thinking about if he falls on that arm again too. So I cut him a little bit of slack on that one. I expect hate mail from everybody because I'm a Marquez fan for that one. So Marquez is now out of the scene. Quartararo is out front, and Miller is now taking the two long lap penalties. So Miller takes the two long lap penalties, and he's still going fast. And basically, Miller winds up running down Quartararo, passes Quartararo, and then winds up starting to pull away at it. And he's doing pretty good. He gets a pretty good lead on it, and he kind of stays stagnant for a little bit. They're sort of the same place. You got everything else is kind of going on around him, but everything's there. Salvadori's Aprilia goes pop. Motor goes on that one. Then we got to the point where we had Rins winds up falling off. We had Zarco starting to make a push to go towards the front, which he does. And the question is, how far is Zarco going to get? Because he's really going fast. We know Quartararo is starting to slow down big time because you could tell the tires were shagged, because by now the rain had quit
and we were definitely drying the track back out again. Again, Quattro is on the softs. Zarco had the medium, so now he's making a push to go to the front. Could Miller hold off Zarco becomes the question. Alesi's bike stops and quits. Does it have the same problem that Salvadori's bike has? Don't really know. Marquez falls off again with about 10 laps to go. He's down at sixth. Marquez later admitted that he was thinking about changing bikes and going back to slicks because the track had dried so much, because he was thinking about what could he do to win. He thought maybe if he changed, he could have in 10 laps, he might be able to run the guys down. But he was thinking about that instead of what was going on the track. So he tumbled himself into the gravel trap a second time. But in the end, Miller was cagey enough to switch the traction control off with about 5 laps to go. When Zarco got close, he put about a half a second on Zarco each time, rode the wheels off the bike to take back-to-back wins ahead of Zarco and Quattraro. So two Frenchmen on the podium in Le Mans. Great day for France. Bagnaia rode a great race to fourth. Petrucci, who does well in the rain, his extra weight that he carries is the biggest guy in MotoGP, helps him heat up the tires, helps him to add grip. He came good on the KTM in fifth. Alex Marquez had sixth. At one point, Alex was going very fast, so there was always a possibility that he was going to do something good. He had finished on the podium last year in the rain, so he appears to like that track. Then we got into Nakagami, who had faded a little bit because of the soft tires. Then Pole in eighth, Lecuona ninth, Vinales 10th, Rossi finished 11th, Marini 12th, Brad Binder had a bad day in 13th, and Andrea Bastianini 14th, Rabat 15th, and the last point being to Tito. And that is MotoGP. Skyler, anything that I missed that you'd like to add?
I mean, not that you missed. I have an opinion about the race.
Oh, please, lay it on me.
I hate these races. I'm not a fan of mixed conditions. I'm not a fan of rain races. This was going out, and there was no race. The race got taken away from us. We had three guys at the start that were all ready to start dive bombing each other in corners, pushing the bikes hard. Then it rained, and then it became a balancing act. Who wasn't going to throw it down? Because after that, I couldn't tell you if anybody passed each other or if we just had a really fast parade in the rain. I could care less about these races, to be honest.
That's okay. Yeah. You're entitled to have that.
I don't find it exciting. It's almost like F1 to me, where it's just like, all right, cool. Guy's out in front. If he doesn't drop it, he's going to win. I mean, Zarco was about the only one who provided any excitement. That's about it.
But see, I like these races because I like a rain race because I think it brings the rider to the fore, and it's not so much the bike.
I mean, it brings the guys who have nothing to lose to the fore most of the time. Guys that don't normally win. And
it always flips something upside down.
It takes away the advantage of certain bikes, I guess. But I don't know, man. I like racing. This isn't racing to me. To me, right?
That's okay. You can look at it that way. I enjoy these. I enjoy this strategy. I enjoy this idea of like, well, who's going to jump? Who's going to go to slicks? Who's not going to go to slicks? Is it time to go to slicks? That whole scenario, to me, is very cool inside of the nerdy engineering world I live in. And what makes it even cooler is the fact that there isn't, I mean, you have some communication that you could put to the bike and say box for slicks, but it's still, that's a crew decision. And it's still the guy on the bike who's got to decide when he wants to go. And that's the part that I enjoy because really, because there isn't the radios and the communication like a Formula One has, there still has to be just this guy deciding what he's going to do and when he's going to do it. And it's like, ooh, the race is actually in each of these people's hands. And you get a little insight into how the mind of each one of these guys works. And so to me, that part's fascinating. That's why I like it.
Yep. And to each their own.
Yes.
Alrighty.
All right. So championship. Quattraro still leads on 80 points. Bagnaia is 1 point behind on 79. Zarco is there on 68. Miller's on 64, putting him 16 points behind. He's definitely in play for the championship now. And I think I might have said Miller was on for the championship or would be a championship contender, I believe I said. Then Vinales, Mir, Espargaro, Morbidelli, Nakagami, and Pol finishing out the top 10 in the championships. And that concludes MotoGP.
A great weekend for MotoGP. All in all, though, there was tons of drama for sure. And that gets us into Moto2. Now, I didn't catch the Moto2 qualifying, but I can do the race, Jim.
That. All right. Oh, let's roll through. We'll roll through the qualifying real quick in Moto 2. Basically, in Moto 2, we had a dry track at that point in the day. In the first qualifying session was Agüero, Roberts, Cam was in there, Arenas, Dixon, Arbolino, and Ramirez. Again, there's some really big names that wind up showing up in this first qualifying session because you got to have your act together, even in Moto 2 now, to get through that next session. When all the dust settled from the first session, it was Roberts, Agüero, Simone Corsi, and Baldassare going through in that session. And then in the run for the pole, the rain had returned. All the mechanics earned their money big time this weekend, changing over these bikes. Lowe's had been on slicks, but Lowe's was on slicks. Bezecchi was on slicks. Agüero was down at turn 7. Schroeder down at 14 because of the rain. Navarro was down at turn 8. So after everybody went down, Roberts was gone to pole above Remy, but how long would it be? Fernandez went through as fast as that's Raul had gone through as fast as Roberts went back on top. Remy went fastest. Lowe's was third. They had 60 seconds left to play. You had no idea who was going to be on top of the show, but it turned out that Raul Fernandez was the fastest Moto2 guy, followed by Bezecchi, Roberts, Canet, who threw in a stonker lap there at the end to get to fourth. Then Augusto Fernandez, Bo Benschneider, Remy fell to seventh on the grid. Gartho, eighth, Manzi, ninth. Lowe's was 10th, followed by Buliga and Chave Verhey, rounding out the top 12 guys on the qualifying session. So, Skyler, what happened in the race?
Well, the race is interesting, right? So, we'll go with it. So, Bezecchi, he gets the whole shot. He gets out the starting. Canet had his elbows out. Now, I'm not the biggest fan of Canet ever since. I think it was, I want to say, a couple, maybe it was like 3 years ago when he was in Moto 3. And I want to say he used, was it Suzuki? Maybe Toba. He used him as a berm, right? In the last corner, on the last lap there. And then crossed the finish line and was like throwing his hands like, what? That's what you do? I'm like, no, that's kind of shit, dude. That wasn't what you should be doing. And so he was out there kind of early, and then I feel like karma just kind of came back at this race because he was getting his elbows out, and then he just flipped himself into the moon down the track, and I was like, whoops. But anyway, he crashed out, but it started a theme here because then right after that, Augusto Fernandez, he ended up chucking it down the road on the second lap from third, unfortunately. Stefano Manzi crashed out from 11th on lap 3. And then we had some championship implications when Sam Lowe's threw it down the road when he made kind of a bad move. He was going to the inside of Chave Verhey, who was also on the inside of another rider. But Chave Verhey was on the race line. Sam came in a little too hot, tagged it back, and took them both down and crashed out on lap 5. But then we got to lap 6, and it was more championship implementation when Joe Roberts ended up crashing out from second, got a little hot in on the brakes. I think what happened there for Joe is that he got in the draft, hit his brakes at the same brake marker, but was carrying a bit more speed, and he also went out and took a gravel bath. Right after that, on lap 7, Hector Gartho, he ended up crashing out with a collision with DJ Antonio. Not really Gartho's fault. DJ Antonio did end up giving him a nudge out there. Ended up suffering, or not suffering, he ended up getting some penalty laps for that. And then, some bit of good news, by the time we hit lap 7, that's when we saw Bobier. He ended up setting the fastest lap time. That was interesting because Bobier had qualified down in a dismal 23rd, but it was already setting fastest laps. And with all those people falling off in front of him, he was up to 13th in this point. And yes, that's an American bias. Don't worry about that. Again, it was a theme, though, for Moto 2. It was just going down. We'll probably talk about this in Moto 3 as well, Jim. But and then Tom Luthi, unfortunately, he crashed out there on lap 15. And at this point, the race was kind of, everyone at this point had to just kind of chill. They were like, okay, people are crashing. The track conditions are very tricky out here. We haven't really gotten a ride on a dry track all week. It's been raining, so we haven't really got used to these tires or the conditions, and the track is still super green. Even if it's dry, it's very green, right? There's not a whole lot of traction to be offered out there, especially if you get just the slightest bit offline, or even worse is if you go up and touch a curb. Right, with no rubber down on the curb, that slick paint is very slick. Even if they have some of the what do they put in some of them, like the sand they put on in the paint to give it a little more grip. Yeah,
I remember Kenny Roberts Jr. complaining about the paint back, you know, 2000, 2001, 2002. That was his big thing, was like, hey, the paint is so slick, you got to put something in it. I think they wound up putting, you know, essentially grid, or it might be some small glass bauble type thing that they put in there. But I think it's just sand basically, so that they throw in to give it some grit. I mean, if anybody has one of those polymer floors, you can get grit put into the polymer floor of your garage so that you don't quote slip on it. Yeah, it doesn't work, but.
That's experience. It sounds like experience. Yeah, exactly.
Pro tip: watch your when the floor is wet with polymer on the floor, whether you got grip in it or not, it's slick.
Oh man, good to know. I'm gonna keep that in mind because I plan on doing that too. If I ever can get a garage, either I move or I can make some money to afford a house, I will certainly keep that in mind. But the race really wasn't that interesting. Raul Fernandez kind of got to the front after a little bit of dicing in the beginning and started separating the field. And because of all the crashing, because of the uncertain conditions, the field really did get kind of spread out towards the midpoint in the race. And they continued to do so. There isn't really a whole lot to talk about. Everyone held station for the most part. After Fernandez started pulling away, unfortunately, you know, from the Americans here who do listen to the show, we had Cam who got himself all the way up to six, and he crashed out with five to go. He was in sixth place. He was leading the group that was behind the top five. So the top five had their own group, and then from sixth back to, I think, 13th, that was another group. They were all clumped together, but he had made his way to the front of that, was setting great lap times, but unfortunately, we go back to talking about curbs. He went into turn three, which, by the way, if there's ever a corner that was collected the most bikes over a weekend that I've ever seen through all of the classes, turn three is so far out in front, it is ridiculous. The turn marshals that worked turn three this weekend are all about 10 pounds lighter for the amount of running and aerobics they had to do this weekend collecting bikes, Jim.
Yep. Well, I think I read in Matt Oxley's article, there was 117 crashes at Le Mans this weekend across all three classes. And he said something to the effect of, like, there's over 100 crashes every weekend that we race at Le Mans. And I think he said that almost 85% of all the crashes are at turn three.
It's insane.
That corner eats people like for lunch. It's weird. I think part of it's the surface of the track. Part of it is the camber is not the way you expect it to be, mm-hmm. right? It's an off camber turn to some extent because they sloped it away to take water for the race cars away. And I think people go in there and you're braking on the turn. The tire's cold because that's the first left-hander after a succession of rights. And I think it cools off. And they go in there and you sort of go over that crown in the road. You kind of go up a little bit, then down, and it falls off. And I think people think they can get on the gas sooner than you really can. And consequently, when they turn on the gas, the front end doesn't have the grip as it goes over the rise, that little slight rise, and boof, away they go. Or they lose it on the brakes going in because they get deep and folded trying to go in. I don't know what that turn does, but it just collects motorcycles, period. End of statement.
It sure does. And, you know, unfortunately, it was... Cam, another great position, crashing at the end. This is what we expect this year, though, right? This is him pushing limits. This is him finding where he's got to be. And the fact that he was able to go from 23rd to 6th, although there was a good heap of riders that went down in front of him to help that get up there, he still made his way to the front. I don't think that I saw some people saying, like, hey, are we having another Heron situation? This is not the same thing. This is Cam figuring out tracks and figuring out the bike. Heron had more of an issue in the beginning of races where he would qualify 23rd and try to get up to 5th with one corner and would send it down and be the torpedo. It just wasn't the same thing going on here. So just give Cam his time. He's going to keep finding limits. He's going to keep making his way to the front. And this is probably not his last crash for the season. Let's just hope that it's not as many in succession. That's for sure. But yeah, Moto2, once we got down to it, we got to the nitty-gritty. It finished up pretty much where you had saw it at. Remy Gardner made a nice charge there at the end to get himself. Now, he did have, through the first corner, he got bumped around there in the mid-pack. So he did shoot him back a little bit, but he did end up climbing his way back up to finish behind his teammate there in second. Ralph Fiennes takes the win. Remy Gardner second. Marco Bezzecchi, he had a nice ride there in third where it was kind of like a bittersweet. He was glad he got third, but he also finished some 4.5 seconds back. Yeah, 4.5 seconds back of the leader after the race. Is not where he wants to be. I think he's kind of starting to get that feeling sinking in, Jim, where it's like, I was winning races, I was there at the front, and I just don't know where my mojo is right now.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that one. I mean, for me in this race, I was disappointed in Roberts. That was a silly mistake.
Yeah.
I mean, you should know. You've been here long enough. You should know better than to have this problem, but you did. I expected more out of Joe because I thought, boy, this is a place that you know, a mixed condition race Joe seems to do well in. It's that dirt tracker in him. I thought, wow, that's good. And then, you know, I wasn't mad at Cam, but I am mad at Cam because, man, that was a sixth. And I was like, man, if we just could have had a sixth, that'd have been great, you know? But there, a lot of thoughts for Remy. I mean, he had that little bump mix up there at the beginning in the start. If without that, he probably would have been, you know, a little farther, a little closer, but he gave it a charge. Io looks so strong this year with both Fernandez and Gardner that, you know, I wonder with Lowe's having crashed again, and this has kind of been Lowe's thing. Would you agree that he kind of sort of starts crashing and he can't stop crashing?
He gets that way, right? He's right. Streaky either way. He gets either wins on streaks or he crashes on streaks.
Yes. It's win. Now it's crash.
This one was,
and I'm like thinking was kind of worse than the others, though. That.
Right? This was definitely an error on his bad. Sure.
It was definitely his bad.
Yeah, some of the other ones you can kind of see like, oh, tracker pushing it, but this was a silly mistake.
And right, and it's like this is the kind of mistake that's going to cost him a championship.
Yes.
Right, because the championship is between. I'm afraid the championship is going to be between the two Io boys.
Yeah, because that's two DNFs in a row.
Exactly. We've talked about how like you have some people that will make mistakes in Moto 3. Yep, happens. Okay, they're kids. You get to Moto 2. Yeah, there's going to be one. Everybody gets maybe one, maybe two mulligans in the season. And then, like, you know, Moto GP, hey, you really can't afford to give up anything. You know, qualifying has to be perfect and blah, 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 blah. And it's and all that. And it's like now it's like you're seeing the MotoGP style get trickled down to the lower classes where you've got to be on it from the very first practice session to be fast enough to be in the second qualifying session so that you can have the great shot to go up pole and have two soft tires and all of this. And it's like it's really caused everybody to have to up their game. And the racing is becoming intense across all the classes as a result of all of this.
But it's like you said, though. I mean, we talked about this all the time. The difference between being a professional and not is one who could do it once in a while, one that could do it every weekend, right?
Right.
And yeah.
But these are what the lower classes are for. They're for you to figure out how to do it every
exactly.
Weekend.
Exactly.
Lowe's is 30 years old and been around the block and been in World Super Sport, Superbike,
and MotoGP.
In MotoGP, yes.
He's done it all.
About that. He's been around, right? You should know not to do these things.
Yeah.
Or at least mitigate the problems you have. Now, that doesn't go to say that Raul doesn't fling himself off the bike in the next weekend, and the fact that Gardner may fall off here and there, and well, then suddenly and Willows gets on a hot streak and wins five in a row.
Yeah, no, it's still, you know, that's the nice thing about it, right? It is early season, but we do see chinks in the armor already from everybody, right? We're seeing things that we're seeing stuff like Remy, he can still burn up tires. We've seen that. Right, Raul is young, but Raul is getting better. But there's still maybe some lumps that he's going to have to take as the season goes on. Right, Bezzecchi is not the start that he wants, but that doesn't mean he doesn't finish strong and all of a sudden catches back up. Right, and then you know Lowe's two DNFs. You're realistically still very much in it. You're some 20. Well, we'll just go to the championship. Right, we'll talk about that. We'll go to the championship. Remy Gardner, he sits on top on 89 points, 1 point in front of his teammate Raul Fernandez, who in turn is ahead of Marco Bezzecchi. Marco Bezzecchi there is some 16 points back, and then we have Sam Lowe's a further 8 points back from there. So, excuse me, 6 points back. Math again, not my strongest point. Anyway, the point here is that it's still less than a race away, right? So Sant goes out, wins the race, and Remy puts it down the track. Okay, he's right back in it, right?
Yep.
It's not terribly over. He's right back in it. It's very close. So, and that could very well happen because it happened to Sam. It could happen to somebody else. Sam is no slouch. These guys are very, you know, they're human. They're vulnerable to making the same mistakes. You just... Yep. Don't want to do it because if you do it, basically Sam has used up his mulligans, right?
Yes.
and we have a long season to go. If he doesn't crash the rest of the season, probably wins the championship or has a very good shot at doing so. You do this again, Because the thing is, when you crash, there's only about three guys that are going to win the race when you do it. That's the problem. And they're the guys that are in front of you. And that's where it's like, ooh, dude, stop doing that. Plus, I want to see this go down to the end. I want to see 5 points between four riders, and we all get going right in the last race. That's what I really want.
Yeah, and this is the one of the classes that truly has that potential. That's where I'm disappointed. Like, look, Gardner, we knew Gardner and Lowe's would be right there with each other. Okay, the bonus is that Fernandez is damn good as a rookie on this bike, and so let's throw that in the mix. Cool. Well, there's three riders in a row. Hey, you could float DJ Antonio in and Bezzecchi back and forth, and you're like, man, this is going to be a hell of a race, hell of a season, hell of a run for the championship, and you feel like, Sam, you're letting us down. That's what it feels like. It feels like it's letting us down. But anyway, I want to shout out to Arbolino. They found something in that motorcycle, and he has some supreme confidence in it now. So let's keep an eye on what happens with Arbolino at Mugello. We're going to Mugello next.
Yeah, I think you're right. We did see a big surge out of him coming there in fourth.
They talked about it, they'd found some magic.
Yeah.
And hey, rock on, man.
That's right. Dude, even Bob and Schneider there with the fifth place, huh? Kind of after we had a hot start to the season, they were really cold there. Hey, back to fifth. Maybe they found the something with the bike there as well. Yeah. But we're going to have to wait and see, because we've seen so far now, I think we've had enough of the season to understand, like, okay, we know who the fast guys are, but we also know that no one's perfect in this and that conditions are going to play a lot. And I think everybody knows who the players are now. Now they're going to really start trying to make the push, right? Because they know who they are. They're going to see each other on track, and they're going to know who they have to beat every weekend. I think Moto2 is just getting hot right now. I think there's enough. We've built it up. We've got the base. It's on the stove. Let's boil this bad boy.
Yeah, let's off a fire alarm. Sorry. Couldn't resist.
I like it. All right, perfect. So
let's get Moto3 done and get out of here. Right?
That's right. Let's do it.
All right, so Moto3, qualifying for that, we'll go through that really quick if I can find my paperwork. Find the notes here. So we would get into the first qualifying session. There was Pedro Acosta in the first qualifying session. I do not think we should be alarmed by this. He was there with Guevara, Toba, Suzuka, Tatai, Salach, and Artigas. Again, big names that are actually all there in qualifying. We know Acosta doesn't seem to want to qualify too well. Mainly, he is a Sunday man. He's the epitome of the Sunday man. But going through was Suzuki, Fagia, Salach, and Jeremy Alcoba. Those were the guys that got through. And Acosta had a major moment at turn 12, and he pretty much kind of just let it be. Whatever it is, and he wasn't going to worry about it, which is kind of how he rolls. He never ever seems to be panicked, or you see him after these things, and then you see him after he's done, he's like, we didn't get to the Q1. That's okay. It's a long race. We're fine. We got a race set up. It's all good. But in the second qualifying session, the rain had arrived because the first session was dry. I forgot to mention that. Everybody was going to the wets. Antonelli and Rossi go down because of the rain. It's not raining now with 7.5 minutes left. Some are on slicks, some are on wets. Mino's on slicks, and he goes to pole for now. McPhee went to pole for a little bit. Salach had a big high side. Mino was back on top, but then Rossi came back through again. Then it was Mino again, and then it was Mino, Rossi. It was at the end there, it was Mino, Rossi, Masia, McPhee, Rodrigo, Antonelli, Salach. Garcia, Suzuki, Finati, Nepa, and Yakinama on the first four rows of the grid. So not too bad. The KTM boys like Anshu and everybody were all down. Darren Binder was down at the end. Again, this rain, you only have one bike in Moto3. You can't have a bike sitting there with wets on it. So that all took time for people to make changes. Nobody knew what they were going to do. And so these guys were just having a rough old time trying to figure out what they were going to do. So race day was going to be a completely different story when it came down to race day. It had bucketed down overnight. It was incredibly wet. And so it was a wet race. Everybody was on wets. Not a big deal. Antonelli took off. He had a hole shot and was leading from the front, but he went down at the last turn. Masia went down at the last turn. It becomes a falling thing. And then the most amazing part of it is Acosta goes down at turn three. Turn three bit the kid. The kid fell off, but the kid had the presence of mind to hang on to the handlebars, pull in the clutch, keep the bike running, remount, and get right back on it again. So the kid went from 21st to third. He fell off, went to 21st, and then started to ride back through the pack again. Now, really, the race is, by this point, we're all stretched out now because of different crashes and things like that. But it's Garcia, Salach, Rossi, Mino, McPhee are out front. And like I said, Pedro is down in 21st. Basically, Garcia and Salach run off with this one with Ricardo Rossi. There's really not much to tell in this story. Garcia was out front. He was brought into the Aspar team to win races because he has the talent, and he's now shown it. So he gives Gas their first win of the season. Salach is there. He was on the Snipers team. He just happens to be right place, right time. He's out front where all the chaos is all happening from behind and everything. The interesting fact is that McPhee finally gets through and he makes a race distance finally. After four DNFs in a row for John, he winds up getting some points, which was good to see him actually finish a race. I was happy for that.
No, he needed that. He definitely needed that.
Oh, he so needed a finish. Sasaki fifth, then Adrian Fernandez. Artigas is seventh, but then Pedro Acosta raced his way from 21st all the way back up to eighth. It was interesting. He had kind of gotten in front of the pack that was sort of the like 15, 16, 17, 18 people, and you had the people who were 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 in front of him, and there was quite a gap to them. And it was like, Raul Fernandez, who is his teammate in the IO team, is hanging off the pit wall with the big arm motion pointing to his head like, boy, you gotta use your head, you're faster than all these guys, just go there. And once he had finally gotten to eighth, kudos to the team. They had the board out telling him that P8 was okay, just stay there. And they were waving the board at least two or three laps. The kid held on and just finished eighth, which was great for him. The man who was flying at the end of the race was Anshu. Anshu got it together there at the end. I think it finally came good because the rain had quit. Dunlap makes a very hard rain tire, according to Simon Crafar, because they said even if it was going to dry out, these rains were going to make the distance. So I think finally Anshu was able to get some heat in the tires and was able to get going. So he winds up finishing 10th. Mino wound up being 11th, Yakinama 12th, DePasqui was 13th, Guevara was 14th, and then Istanhar was 15th, picking up the last point. Anything else in the Moto 3 race, Skyler? I mean, that's a bit quick, but we're pushing well into the hour and some odd minutes now, so I wanted to get through it.
It was a very expensive race for many teams. There's a lot of bikes that skittle down, and who was it? Was it Rigo that crashed three times?
I haven't seen three times in a race in a while.
That is definitely a pack it up and go home situation at that point.
Yeah.
But no, not too much to add to the race. It was, I literally just watched it about 20 minutes ago, if we can get on the show here. But it was definitely a battle of attrition. It had very tricky conditions and trying to learn that. And yeah, Sergio Garcia just coming up strong there and having a great race. Him and Philip Salich just showing it up big. That was interesting to see those two guys kind of battle out there towards top. But
There wasn't much going on in that race. I mean, like I said, when Garcia got out front, it was pretty much out. Now, no shame to Salach and to Rossi, but they're not on the same playing field as Garcia. And, you know, basically everybody who was a championship contender who was nearby, the Mino, Fanati, Antonelli group, they all crashed. So, you know, Acosta does nothing but add more points to his championship. So now the kid's on 103 points. Garcia's on 49. So there's at least two race wins in there somewhere that people have got to come up with without Acosta actually scoring a point.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. You know, it's going to be what it's going to be.
But look at the battle after that, though. If you take Acosta out, it's
the thing. If, like, you take Acosta out of this, Garcia's on 49, Mino's on 47, Ramadi on 46, and Antonelli on 44, and Sasaki's on 44 as well. So right there, that is a 5-point spread among 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 riders.
right? And then it's only another 5 points back to Masia, right? And then three points back to Bender.
Yep.
Jeez. Even Philip Salek, this is how crash heavy MotoGP. Philip Salek with that second place brought himself to ninth, right? And he's only 19 points out of second.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Acosta, man, this guy. Now I'm kind of interested to see like how fast if you keep up the pace, how fast can you wrap it up? Can you get the record for closing down a championship with X amount of races to go?
I think it's very possible. It's going to be. I'm looking so forward to Mugello because now we're back to a track where the draft is very, very important. Sort of. Kind of like Doha in Qatar. The draft is so important for qualifying. It's so important for the races. You've got to be in that lead draft. It's always a huge line of motorcycles going across that line in a Moto3 race. It's going to be a humdinger, bar banger, and you just got to think that Acosta is just going to flourish. And, you know, we've seen nothing to say that he's not going to be able to handle himself there, but it's just going to be so fascinating to watch. And again, when can he wrap it up? You know, does he wrap it up with 5 rounds to go, 4 rounds to go, 6 rounds to go? That's what's going to be interesting because it seems like he doesn't seem like he has a kink in his armor at all. Like there's nothing the kid can't handle. You can throw anything at him and he's just okay with it, which is a great point. You know, it's either supreme confidence or supreme stupidity, whichever you take your pick, because it's the only two things it can be.
Yeah, whichever gets you to the front. So it'll be fine.
I mean, he's just. He's an incredible talent. He is one of the people that you look at and you go, he's special. It just like you look at Raul Fernandez and you go, he's special. There's just those people in a talent pool as deep as everybody has to be at the world level. There are those few who stand above everybody else. And he is one of those people.
That is very true. All right, well, that brings us to the end of Moto 3. We can get to wrapping this show up. The next race, like Jimmy mentioned, is going to be Mugello here in a couple weeks' time at the end of the month here on May 30th. So not this weekend. This weekend, we just get a little bit of F1 action, but then we get the Mugello race here. That's Indy 500 weekend as well because Memorial Day weekend.
Memorial Day weekend's next weekend.
Right, so that's not this weekend, but next on the 30th. We get Monaco this weekend, which is strange for all your F1 fans. Normally, that's Monaco and Indy 500 all in Mugello, like all of that come together in one weekend. It's like, man, I'm not leaving my living room, but it's a little spread out over a couple weekends, which is probably better for scheduling wise because I'll get to see a bit more. So Mugello, one of our favorite tracks. I go ahead and say most motorcycle fans, I think, love Mugello. Not just because it's in Italy, but because it's such a cool track. Even we got C-Formula 1 last year. That's going to be coming up. Remember, folks, if you want to email us, whether it's in regards to you want to talk about the racing, you want to talk about some riders, you want to talk about some of your past on motorcycles, whatever you want to talk about, or if you want to become a host of the show, like we had mentioned earlier, you can reach us at motopod@motopodcast.com. You can also head over to Facebook, Facebook page there at facebook.com/motopod. We're also on Twitter. We're at @moto_pod. You can follow us there for any news and announcements. I am also on Twitter, but at Instagram, I am at SkylarV28. Jim, where can people find you?
At MotoRGV, Instagram and Twitter.
All right. So this is going to be a bit of an editing nightmare for this show.
We're going to have fun with this.
So maybe it might take a day or two before we get it out to everyone. Definitely faster than the last show. Like I said, hopefully everybody is understanding. Our schedules are a little nutty this year, but we will do our best to get the shows out to you in a timely fashion and make sure we get them out before at least the next race shows up. That way you can listen to and argue with us while you're yelling at the speakers in your car or nodding your head in agreement, whichever your way. We just appreciate you all listening in to the show. And with that, Jim, I will go ahead and end this, and I will see you later. And zoom, zoom.
See y'all at Mugello.